Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing the Nigeria-UK port infrastructure deal recently signed by President Tinubu during his recent state visit to the United Kingdom. I'm joined by a very special guest, Professor Akpan Ogan Epo, Emeritus Professor of Economics and Public Policy at the Department of Economics and at the University of Uyo, Nigeria. Akpan is a Nigerian economist, well-known Nigerian economist. Prof, it's a pleasure to have you join me today.
Okay.
And I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. So let's start off. Last month, President Tinubu, the president of Nigeria, had a state visit to the United Kingdom here and signed what has been hailed by his supporters as an amazing deal, a £746 million port infrastructure deal with the United Kingdom. Can you, for those that don't know about this deal, can you speak on the scope of this deal and what this deal entail and what benefits or demerit it has to Nigeria?
Well, thank you very much. The president, President Tinubu, as you rightly said, went to UK, and two major issues took place. One, as you rightly said, is signed, I think, a loan of £746 billion pounds sterling. There were two parts. One was to develop assist the steel industry in the UK, and then develop the two ports in Lagos, the Tinkan Island and the Upper Port. And I early argued somewhere else, the loan of £746 billion pounds sterling to help the UK industry was misplaced. Because in Nigeria, we have the Ajakuta Steel, which have been comatose for several years, okay? And we have the Oshobo machine tool, the same thing. And any kind that wants to industrialize needs the steel industry. So for us to take such a loan to help the steel industry in the UK and create employment for citizens of Britain against those in Nigeria, and we have very high unemployment rate at all levels in Nigeria. And also to enhance the banking system, because I think it was financed by the Citibank. Okay? Mm. And so that assisted the steel industry in the UK, while the steel industry in Nigeria is suffering, has never taken off for years. And the banking sector in the UK. And we are now aware of the rate of interest. Even if we are aware of the rate of interest, it didn't make sense to some of us for several reasons. One, the rate of borrowing in this government has been alarming and disturbing. In fact, the government has borrowed more money than President Buhari borrowed in 8 years. Nothing wrong in borrowing if you are transparent and accountable and you are borrowing to finance capital projects, which will enhance growth. And to be sure that a lot of field studies were carried on in those projects. Then secondly, when you are borrowing, you have to be careful of what I call intergenerational aspect. Because those of us who are alive today are not the ones who pay for those debts. It's the future generation. And when they come around and see that we borrow so much, for example, like the one I just mentioned in UK, the steel, I go for steel, and nothing has happened, and we have a steel industry here, they will abuse us in our graves. Then the other is the loan to enhance the two ports in Lagos, Tinkan Island and Upper Port. First, I'm aware that there are contracts already given to several companies to renovate those ports or enhance those ports. Secondly, in a federal system, you don't locate everything in Lagos. There are other ports. There's the port in Warri, in Port Harcourt, in Onitsha, the deep sea port in Akwa Ibom, which is very natural. No mention was done, you know. So in my view, you can pay a state visit. There's nothing wrong with it. But first, we have carried out extensive and rigorous study to know which of these projects make sense to Nigeria, whether the loan makes sense. For example, our president has gone virtually all over the world. He has signed several MOUs. But FDIs have not come in. What I mean, foreign debt investment have poured in marginally. What we have is foreign portfolio. That's different. For foreign portfolio, they come in to take advantage of the high interest rate and make their money in the stock exchange. When there's any hiccup, they take their portfolio and they leave. So no FDI has come in. So before you go and sign such a major deal in Britain, we have allowed experts, and Nigeria has, I think, the Nigerian Investment Promotion Commission, that have done a lot of work before the president goes to Britain to sign such a deal. And the details we don't even know, but I'm aware that several weeks ago, that amount of money, 746 billion pounds sterling, he requested the House of Parliament to approve that loan, and they approved it without proper oversight function. So I don't think there'll be any gain, in my view. The loan will enhance the British steel industry, create jobs for Britain, enhance their banking system, the banks that involved, the one for the ports, the two ports in Lagos. When you run a federal system, you have to have what I call balanced development strategy in order to avoid instability and problems in the federation. There should have been other ports. The new ones should have been enhanced.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me, bro? So before you talked about new ports. So there are a number of things that you raised. Let me start with one of them. So obviously it looks like this deal is a bad deal for Nigeria. Where we're looking at more than a quarter of that amount, nearly half, 236 million is guaranteed to be used on British goods and services, to revive the British Steel, a moribund and struggling organization in the UK, and secure jobs for them. So if we look at it, you mentioned that Jakarta Steel Mill, which was, I think, handled by the Soviet Union during Obasanjo's tenure in the 70s, late 70s, there. And then also looking at that, Nigeria has massive tons of steel, you know, that are still untapped. So if we look at this, where I want to come is this. After the Second World War and the West came out successful after the Cold War, and then they had they used loans, had the IMF and financial, all these things to control growth and development in Africa. So if we look at this loan deal, for instance, can we say that in this 21st century, in 2026, Can we say that the Africans or Nigeria in this instance, that they don't have agency in striking a deal that favors his people? Should we say that the external people, the foreigners or the UK in this instance, still has that upper hand? Why does it favor them and no, why are Nigerians not making the deal right for Nigerian people?
Yes, good question. You see, if you put your country's interest first, then you can negotiate and maybe perhaps you end up having a win-win. A lot of these days that you see, there's an endemic corruption system. So when they go to negotiate, it's self-interest first. Self-interest first. Because in economics, if you are a developing country and you take loan or you borrow to finance hard and soft infrastructure, for example, initially, the economy will grow up to a plateau, okay? After that plateau, if you keep taking loan, the economy will not grow anymore. Because at that point, it's assumed that what you borrow the money for is now making returns, okay? First, to pay back the debt, and then it will filter into the different sectors of the economy. So you can now grow using your internal resources. If you keep borrowing, the economy will no longer grow again. You see a decline, okay? The problem we have in our system is that a lot of times when we go to negotiate these loans, we don't carry with us experts. We don't carry technocrats, okay? We go with politicians. Huh? And for the most part, with due respect, most of them are not experts in even the field they claim that they are in. So for the most part, and then the type of loan we are taking, we have to be very careful. When you take a World Bank IMF loan, no matter how we say it is, we have all those loans, but they have conditionalities. There are conditions you have to fulfill. Eh? And for the most part, those conditions are not fulfilled. If you go to the African Development Bank, for example, Nigeria has a trust fund, Nigerian trust fund in the African Development Bank. Eh? Why not leverage on that to get the ADB loan? There are conditions. Eh? They like going for commercial loans. They like going for euro bonds, okay? Where there will be road shows and so on and so forth. And implicitly, there are a lot of rent seeking that is going on. Because if you negotiate properly, you may end up having a win-win where you take the loan. For example, as I just said, you take the loan and you build your power sector. The power sector, for example, is no longer a rocket science. We know the people that can bring you power, they have the expertise, they have the money, and so on and so forth. Why don't we do that? I'm not giving an example. Recently, in our country, we've seen that it could be done. Barton Nagy, who was one time prime minister of power, and he was removed. He took the expertise to Abia State. Eh? And now, if you go to Abia, power is almost 24 hours. The experts are here. They don't use them, okay? Because of selfish interests, you know. So that is part of the problem. We don't put Africa or Nigeria first, okay? We put self-interest, you know. So what you've seen is that the Nigerian elites and the political class, they've captured the state for their own interests and their families. That is why it's not. First, I mean, a country like Nigeria, for example, they're experts in everywhere. Both in Nigeria and outside Nigeria, which you can tap, you can use our experts in the diaspora. Okay, so that's the point. And I say that as someone who's been involved in policy making at the national level for years, that is the problem. Okay, they look at the regulations, they pick what favors them, and they try to implement that. So that's part of the problem. So and then some countries need to take this. This loan because there are enough resources. If you look at the money Nigeria has made from oil over the years, okay, do we have anything to show for it? Why don't we behave like say Norway that got had oil and say this oil is a windfall? Let's target our infrastructure like education and so on and so forth. In Nigeria, we have the oil money, but we haven't to really show for it, you know. Even though the oil revenue has its own problems, because I see the oil revenue at any point in time as a windfall, because oil, as we've seen, is a wasting asset. Okay, You don't control the price. You don't control the output. So it's an exogenous source of revenue. You can't rely on that to finance your development. But we can raise internal resources. We can diversify the economy. We can industrialize the steel industry. So we can make revenue outside of oil, because one day the oil will finish. As we have seen now, countries are moving towards renewable
energy.
So these are some of the problems that we face. So there's the issue of political will, but it goes beyond that. There's an endemic corruption in most African countries.
Yeah, I agree with you, because it was Sanusi Lamido, the former CBN governor. I was watching him recently, where he was pointing at the paradox of this borrowing we're talking about the oil subsidy as well, like especially the oil subsidy, that you remove oil subsidy, you're supposed, then it's also an irony if you remove oil subsidy to then be borrowing further. And then I think it was the former finance minister that I've talked about, monies that accrued that were not remitted to the stuff. So I agree with the state capture, the endemic corruption. But there's something you mentioned about some of these loans are not borrowing for commercial purpose. Because if you look at the Lekki deep sea port, Nigeria tested an alternative path where they borrowed 1.5 billion, and that was a public-private kind of partnership, and they got a lot of concession as well, because it's a viable. Why didn't they apply the same to this, knowing again that the Tinkan port and the Apapa port have been generating ports, they are ones that should attract foreign direct investment. So why taking a sovereign fund for that?
Yes. This is the paradox. So as you said, the two ports in Lagos generate a lot of revenue. And if you do your arithmetic well, you could claw back some of those profits, some of those revenue, into enhancing the port. Why do you have to go and borrow? So as I was saying, that there are things hidden that we don't know. They're not transparent. They're not accountable. And I see that as an attempt to make money for themselves, put it that way, rent seeking. Because it doesn't make port. That makes sense. Their papa has been there over the years, and generate a lot of revenue. You know, why not use revenue to develop the to renovate the port? You know, go and get another sovereign loan. So these are some issues, and I agree with you. But my problem is that the Nigerians themselves have to rise up and ask some of these questions.
Mm-hmm.
People are asking, but we've not seen viable. They keep doing what they're doing. For example, recently the president asked for another loan, the amount of money, millions of, they were 500 something billion.
Yeah.
I asked for it like in the morning. But the next day, the House approved it. No oversight, no questions being asked, you know, and the rest. And then they tell you that the GDP, the debt GDP ratio is within the benchmark. Okay. And my argument is that GDP does not pay debt.
Mm-hmm.
Revenue pays debt.
Mm.
If you calculate the debt revenue ratio, we're in trouble. Because for every naira or dollar we make, we use almost 85% of that to service debt. So what they kept telling you, and of course, the ratio will be within the benchmark, because once the denominator is higher than the numerator, okay, you fall within the benchmark. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are some of the issues, and that is the time. My point, I'm not saying a government should not borrow, okay, but you borrow wisely and don't borrow to finance recurrent expenditures. And do a cost benefit analysis if you are borrowing to build bridges or roads, so that we know when we start making returns that will pay back that loan.
Mm.
From my experience, I'm surprised if those things have been done.
Mm. You mentioned something very important about Nigerians rising up, and I see it as One of the criticisms that I've been writing on is the educational system of our educational system in raising critical, and you're an academic, so I wanted to speak to that, to the dilapidated educational system that we've had over the years where we are churning out graduates that are not critical. So I wanted to speak to that aspect. So do we have a case where the educational system is intentionally, deliberately being undermined and raising people that cannot critically, or are there other factors why Nigerians can, you know?
Well, there are a series of factors, but first we have to be honest that a lot of the people we get into, for example, universities, are not university material, okay? And also we are not a little bit, let me say, we're not dynamic, we're not changing with the global system, okay? So we turn our graduates who are looking for government jobs, for example. It shouldn't be the case. Then the quality of graduates, to be honest, have deteriorated over time. And I say that as someone who was once a vice chancellor of a federal university of New York, where I had to send away over 2,000 students who entered illegally. You teach what you know. The staff we are employing to teach, okay, themselves need to be taught, okay? Because years ago, there was a brain drain where a lot of Nigerian experts left the university system. I was one of them. I left for Zimbabwe. Instead of government solving the problem, they employ anyone that wants to come and teach university, to be teachers, to be lecturers. You don't approach it that way. And then we have too many universities that doesn't make sense, okay? The ones you own as federal government, you cannot finance. You are building new ones. I don't know where you get my point. And then we have too much emphasis on certificates. On getting certificates, okay? Well, people should acquire skills. We should emphasize vocational education and so on and so forth. Some years ago in Nigeria, we used to hear about trade centers where people go and acquire skills and live a better life, okay? These days, it's a different ballgame. The university, the polytechnics that were meant to produce middle-level manpower have turned themselves to become universities where they give the issue certificates that cannot be useful. So it's a lot of problems. Then under funding of the university system, they're not well funded, okay? And then periodic strikes.
Right.
Okay. So students know when they come in, they don't know when they will go up, when they will get out. All these problems is what we're having. But having said that, there are still a group of students that are of high quality and could perform anywhere in the world, as we have seen. There are still young graduates who live in Nigeria and go to UK, go to USA, go to Germany, and they perform well. Eh? The problem is that they are not as many as they used to be. I don't know
why. Makes sense, yeah.
So, but the few of high quality can perform anywhere. Because see, the school system itself has to be rejigged. When the government says, oh, people should go into business, they use the fire brigade approach. Every school now starts teaching entrepreneurship. You may not have to get a degree in that to become a businessman. I don't get my point. You may study physics and then I want to be a businessman. And then take a few months course in accounting or bookkeeping. I'm giving you as an example. So we need a system where if you go to any tertiary institution, by the time you are through, you should have learned something that you have learned about. You have learned an integrated, something that's integrated, okay? I remember one time president, Nnamdi Azikiwe, used to say that at that time, I read one of his books where he said, why he preferred the U.S. education was that in the United States, you are like jack of all trades, master of some. In other words, by the time you leave the university, you can fit into anywhere. Eh? Okay. And that is to be the case. But now it has changed. I think there are over 90 universities owned by the federal and state government, and maybe about something owned by the private and faith base. But I ask myself, where do they get the staff to teach in these universities? So what you see is that we're just recycling ignorance.
Recycling
ignorance, you know. So in those days, exam is not the true test of knowledge, I agree, but it's the only way we can determine whether somebody is good or not. In those days, the best will be asked to be trained again, maybe master's, maybe doctorate, to come back and impact knowledge. My brother is no longer the case now, because the best are not interested in the various system, because the incentive structure is so bad, okay? But I speak to you, by the time I retired formally 2 years ago, my salary as a professor at the bar was 414,000 naira a month.
Wow.
So, and a brilliant first-class material, or even up to 2-2, would not want to enter the system because he'd be paid 120,000 naira a month.
That's ridiculous.
In all the fields.
That's right. But speaking of a people-centered government, you mentioned something before where there is a disparity or over concentration on the on Lagos,
yes.
Whereas we have all the ports in Nigeria that are underdeveloped, that are not looked into. Why do you think over the years, Nigeria is now 60 plus years, why do you think that the Lagos ports have been prioritized, whereas we could have opened up other ports in Warri, in Akwa Ibom, in Port Harcourt? And what is behind this? Is this a deliberate tactic?
Yeah, well, we don't know, because see, these are not even new ports. For example, the only new port I can think of now is maybe Onitsha. Warri has been there for a long time. The Calabar port has been there. Okay. Maybe the Akwa Ibom port, this port is a new one, which they've not even touched. So, these ports have been there. These are, why do you concentrate everything in Lagos? And that's why everybody's going to Lagos. If you are running a federal system, at least from the center, you should have a balanced development. Spread the projects. And that will help the migration to Lagos. You know, why they are doing that, I don't know. There are people who suggest that Lagos is the country's commercial capital, but you can create others, you know. Others. I don't want to argue that he's sent to Lagos because the president now was the governor of Lagos State. There's a bull have argued that way, you know. But my position is that you are the center, you can spread this. And one way of doing that is to make sure that you design, or as a new government, you design a development plan where I will know that for this year or next year, social project will come to my state. But when you are doing it ad hoc or based on political party patronage, because a problem, it creates instability. You know, these are some of the problems. You know, so is the country making progress? It depends, because some years ago we were told by our parents that the mayor of Enugu was an awesome man. It cannot happen today, my brother. Because to build a nation, You belong to a tribe, but your tribe will be secondary. To be the nation, the tribe must die. Not a natural death, but you know what
I understand what you're there. I understand what you mean.
So that's the problem that we're having. So we ask the question, do we really, is there a nation? Maybe that's why things are not working. We don't know.
So this is where the irony is. So what I don't understand, and what I see if you can make sense of it, is on one hand, there is, we've seen, especially since the APC took over power from Buhari, but it's become, it's even worsened under Tinubu, where we've seen this heightened inter-ethnic tension and so much, where again there's a case of people are bringing out structures of other ethnicities in Lagos. So I'm happy you mentioned, you linked that to migration, where everybody's running to that. And in this deal, the United Kingdom managed to put a migration clause.
Exactly.
Yes. And so the irony is, as well, there is anti-migrant stuff here in the UK, and why are people not linking the how these loans, this deny these people of development, and why then they have to migrate? Why are they not looking at the link to it? Can you explain that?
Well, I think that should have been done. That's why I was saying they should have done a good homework, since you are visiting Britain, our former colonial masters. You should link the issue of migration to this loan and say, okay, my people have been maybe deported or whatever. Where will you put a stop to that? Can we discuss before you deport them and so forth? That was not done. In fact, a better issue which I raised in one program was that the issue of reparation, okay? Britain colonized Nigeria and exploited the system, took away a lot of mineral resources, a lot of arts, and but at least just for the purpose of a record that we are aware that they looted a lot of our resources, mentioned in the visit. I don't think it was mentioned. As you said, the issue of migration wasn't linked. They have been linked. So that's why I said we're not getting anything from those loans.
No, on the contrary, the United Kingdom even got more as well. They got more
yeah. Because they have said they will deport Nigerians from Britain and we didn't say anything. Their steel industry will be enhanced, their banking system will gain from it. I'm not sure the Nigerian bank is making money from it. We are not sure if the rate of interest of that loan is kept in secrecy, you know. So there are a lot of issues. And I thought when our president came back and asked the House of Parliament to approve the loan, the House would have asked questions, you know. But they didn't, you know, they didn't. So Britain is getting more from this arrangement than Nigeria.
Let's come to the last question. Let's begin to wind down. So you mentioned Abia. So we're seeing what OT is doing in Abia now, where it is possible when we have a leader or leadership that is people centered, where we can really see this change. So if you look at that, and also we look at the lack of distinction among the three arms of government, where it looks like the executive has captured the judiciary and the legislative. So I guess the question is, moving forward, how do you see, one, do you think, despite all of these weaknesses that we've pointed out in this loan, do you think there's going to be any positive achievement or positive impact, even if it's very little? And how can we change the narrative? How can we ensure change? Moving forward, what can be done moving forward?
I think that to keep the country united, we may have to reduce the powers of the center further. Okay, I think we should, since the states and the governments are closer to the people, okay, we should push more things to the concurrent list. There we can challenge our subnational governments, okay, better. Because if I live in New York, what would I, there's no need going to Abuja if all I want is in my state. And then my state, I live there, I'm closer there, I can ask the government, what are you doing wrong? But now the center is too powerful. That's why I see it, okay? We need to decentralize. And you could see what happened in Abia Jules. When they moved the power issue to the concurrent list, Abia said, under Alex Oti, grab the advantage. And now, if you go to Abuja, you will know Abuja again. Means that government can work if the people you put in place are ready to work for the people, are credible, government can work. But government, in our context, should be involved in the economy up to a point, then it should withdraw. Because if you stay too long, it could be a problem. So I think if we decentralize, if we have a weak center, in my view, the country can make progress. The center is just too powerful. Look at the concurrent list and the exclusive list. You see what I mean? That's one way of solving our problem. Secondly, within the states, so national government, you don't need a crowd for a change. We need a few people who are vocal, who hold government accountable at the subnational level also, to show us what you've done with the money you received. For example, when they removed subsidy, a lot of money was sent to some national governments. They got a lot of money. What have they done with the money? Okay. Most of them were involved in palliatives, giving citizens rice, sewing machine, and so on and so forth. That is not how to grow an economy. So what we are saying, not just some of these problems also I'll speak over to the subnational governments. Yeah. So we need vocal group to raise issues and put government on the stools and make government accountable. Because right now, we've not seen that on a reasonable scale. And that's why we are where we are. Okay. For example, if we ask government, okay, you are boring, what are you doing with the money? Show us the road. I once told someone that since I grew up to know my village, it has never changed. Whatever you see there are personal private efforts. I don't know what but if, for example, the states have power and local government, we can hold them accountable since we know them. For example, you have a federal system and you are against state police, it doesn't make sense. You know, now they are moving towards it, which is fine, but it has taken too long. Maybe we have helped in this issue of insurgency. So that's the way I see some of these issues.
I agree. Prof, it's been an interesting conversation. I really enjoyed the insight and I agree with you. I agree with your submission and how we need to move forward. And for some of us that believe, I believe with some of the examples that we're seeing, it's possible to be done. It's possible. Yes. And it's very, very possible to achieve these things with the right people and the right citizen with a high consciousness, social consciousness. Exactly. And then decentralizing, bringing politics local. Even, I would even say beyond the state, even at the local level.
At the local level, yes.
Centralizing it to that level, giving them more powers so that it's very, very closer to the people. Yeah, but I really appreciate your insight and your time, and I'll be in touch.
We need you guys in the diaspora to also show interest in your country and help us.
Well, dude, I was recently in Nigeria last month to do, I did a national dialogue, a youth national dialogue, and then we're really working. I'll be in touch, John. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in today, and as usual, join me to thank our guest, Professor Akpanikpo, for his wonderful and useful assessment of the Nigeria $1 million port agreement. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.